John spreads his hands low on Cadman's back and wonders why it's so easy with her. He can touch her under her shirt, calloused against her skin. He can spread his fingers and feel more if he wants. She got herself off sitting next to him on a giant ancient futon, and he can still remember the smell of her on her hand. But he can pass down orders and take reports from her with no problem. And if the camaraderie is a little easier between them, and if Cadman's mouth turns up a bit in moments when she's at ease, it feels just the opposite of awkward. Rodney makes him awkward. Rodney doesn't even acknowledge what they did, his full attention devoted to work or a mission or mortal terror. It's John who is thrown by everything, muscles tensing when Rodney breaches his personal space, stomach sinking to hot lava. Sometimes, if his attention wanders, he sees Rodney sprawled out before him, gripping himself. Then he needs to find something to do on the other side of the city before Rodney notices that the loose-fitting uniform pants aren't quite loose enough. He thinks Rodney knows anyway. John has managed to avoid the room for a week. The first night was strategic retreat. They'd gone too far. He needed a step back. The second night, he started to think maybe they hadn't gone far enough. He can touch Rodney in his fantasies, so he allowed himself that much. The third and fourth nights were spent off-world in a mud hut with Ronan and Taylor and Rodney. And John made scrupulously sure that his attention did not wander. Three more nights of attempted sensibility, and John is back in the room, stripped to his t-shirt, pants and boots. He goes running without a weapon, he tells himself, and he can go dancing without one too, even as his hand twitches down his thigh. The room is dangerous in ways bullets and steel can't defend against. He finds Cadman right away, and to his relief she touches him first. Her hands are smaller than Rodney's, but quick and strong and precise as they stroke across his stomach and slip around the back of his neck. The skin there tingles, and the short hairs at his nape rise in anticipation. Her mouth is warm under his, but also solid. There. The beat of the music is already pulling him under, dragging him away, and he thinks that maybe if Rodney were here, right now, John could reach across the empty space between them and touch him, run a palm up under the sleeve of his shirt, fold a thumb over his bottom lip and into his mouth, press his own mouth to Rodney's neck. Cadman runs her fingers into the hair behind his ears, knitting them at the back of his head and dragging them down over the tense muscles of his neck, digging in her thumbs and popping the painful knots there. He tilts his head up, and in the flash of a strobe, he sees Rodney standing by the door. John can't move. Rodney's right there, not 5 yards away, and John is frozen in place, blood pounding at every pulse point, body hard and tense. Rodney's too far away, out of reach. There's more than an arm's length between them. Rodney? Cadman asks, and then, without waiting for an answer, go to him. She presses her mouth to his throat, a shock of warm and wet that doesn't break his inertia. Rodney's eyes are wide and determined, leaving the rest of his face to show his fear. John knows he should break this trance and make a decision, choose a path and end the game. He waits too long. There's a flash of something sad in Rodney's eyes, and then he turns and disappears through the bright square out to Atlantis's hallways. That's the impulse John needs, and he moves Cadman aside, brushes past her, and reaches the door too late. Rodney's out of sight. He turns back to the room, blinking away the white spots left on his vision by the glare of the hallway. What just happened? He asked Cadman, who is standing next to him, arms crossed. The mood is broken, and he's the John Shepherd he recognises, confused and hopelessly out of his depth. The corner of Cadman's mouth twitches. That was what we call, she says, a failure to act.
come easily, 'cause it's all that I've known. True love is a fairy tale, undamaged, so how would I?
Rodney keeps Laura's taste on his tongue as much as he can. He almost doesn't go back to the room after he met John's eyes and John didn't come to him. He knew that there was risk with this. He knew that John had other considerations. He didn't know it would hurt so much. He's stupid, stupid expecting anything from Shepherd. Shepherd has everything to lose and only Rodney to gain. It's not worth it. Laura's sympathetic, holding him, melting into his asking hands. Her body is guiding them both, keeping them to the music, holding Rodney together. He knows that he talked non-stop for the first half hour. Regrets and despair and defiance, lost to the angry rhythm of the bass. And while he still can't keep from talking, bitching about Shepherd has given way to telling funny stories about Shepherd. And Rodney has just gotten through the bit about him not knowing the definition of strange when Laura's attention shifts and Rodney turns to see who she's looking for. Before he gets far, large hands press down on his shoulders. Rodney freezes. "Don't stop on my account," the familiar voice growls in his ear, and that totally doesn't help. Rodney's fully hard now, arching and needy at those words, and he can't catch the rhythm of the music again. He laughs because it's so absurd, and John curves his hands down over Rodney's upper arms and nuzzles his shoulder. Laura's eyes are bright and wide, anchoring him. She reaches for Rodney's hips, drags him back into the beat, just as John's hands slide onto the skin of Rodney's arms. John's wearing gloves, leather, that make the hair on Rodney's arms stand straight up. From when the environmental controls went down earlier, he thinks distantly. He'd sent John to the cold areas because he didn't want to go himself. John's hands fold over Laura's, pushing him into the music, and for once in his life, Rodney can't keep up, so he just lets them take him with them. He's surprised when it works. "Close your eyes." He does, instantly, without thought or question. His mind kicks in a second too late, demanding things like, "Why?" and, "Oh, so now it's all fine and dandy." And, "Just because my eyes are closed doesn't mean everyone's are, Colonel." But the next instant, John's hands slide down the front of Rodney's thighs. Rodney gasps and stutters, and manages not to have an embarrassing reaction by concentrating on the math and the music. He might even be counting out loud, but no one calls him on it. John's hands sweep down and Laura's sweep up, and even though it should be the easiest thing in the world to tell them apart, nothing is easy anymore. John's hands press off the back of Rodney's thighs, which is more erotic than he'd ever expected, and trail over his hips, when Rodney wants pressure elsewhere. Then those hands push up Rodney's back on either side of his spine, pushing all his muscles exactly the wrong way, and he never thought anything could feel so good. He's proven wrong again when leather drags over the nape of his neck, and even Laura's warm hands on his stomach can't stop the shock that runs through his entire body. Rodney feels leather at his waistband, the skim of gloves as his pants are opened. That's Shepherd, no question. Rodney can feel the width of his palm, the leather of the glove, the strong biceps at his shoulders and forearms at his ribs. He wonders what's up with the gloves. It certainly isn't cold here anymore. But when Shepherd slides into Rodney's pants and wraps one hand around him, Rodney decides it's time to stop thinking. Let Shepherd take his weight, the other man's chest solid against Rodney's back, and his hips pressed against Rodney's ass. Shepherd's hard as he was in his own hand the other night, and Rodney thinks this is how it will always be between them. Feelings turned into action in the dark, never anything for anyone to see. John's other hand is on his hip, and Laura's are on his chest, her fingers dancing over his sensitive nipples. Rodney can't help himself from thrusting into John's hand, and the sharp exhalation of warm air on his cheek is his reward. Shepherd sets up their rhythm, matches it to the beat of the music, and Cadman follows along, pressing against Rodney's chest. Rodney hopes she's sufficient shield. He doesn't need everyone in the room staring at his dick, but he doesn't open his eyes to check. Rodney is preoccupied by John's hand jerking him off in steady, even strokes, but eventually he realizes that the rolling thrusts against his ass are contributing equally to his arousal. He rubs back and feels the studded gasp in his ear. Then John is really focusing, fucking him through the layers of clothes they can't shed. And Rodney's body is seizing up, tremors racing along his thighs and up the base of his spine. John twists his hand, does something that makes Rodney nearly double in half, and he gasps, "Jesus, fuck!" and realizes that he's been talking the entire time. Everything melts into sound and sensation, and Rodney's no longer sure who's laughing, who's growling, and who's whimpering high and needy. He reaches back, wanting something solid to brace against, something solid to hold on to. But as usual, John is impossible to reach. But then John moves and he's right there. So Rodney curls his fingers around John's thighs and hangs on, because this ride is better than any roller coaster he's ever been on. And John is pushing him right over the crest. Rodney comes, pressed immobile between John and Laura. The pulsing beat of the music returns to his ears before he realizes that he's lost it, and he finds Laura's arms under his hands and her hand on the back of his neck, pressing his forehead against her shoulder. "Can I open my eyes now?" he asks, lifting his head. "Yes, Rodney, you can open your eyes." Laura sounds like she's laughing at him, but when he does unclench his eyes, there's only a smile on her face. "Are you all right?" she asks, touching his cheek. "Yes, yes, of course," he says, nodding, eyes scanning behind her, then turning his head. "John, Colonel Shepherd, where, that was him, wasn't it?" He hears his voice pitch higher and stops talking before it can crack. "Yeah," Laura said, "it was him." And Rodney knows without being told that now he's gone. "Rodney's mad at me," John confides to Cadman, nuzzling his face in her hair. "McKay? Really? How can you tell?" she drawls back, circling her thumb down the side of John's neck. It gives him goosebumps, even with the heat of the room and Cadman's body. "I haven't seen him here," John says neutrally, as if he hasn't spent 3 nights waiting. "And he belittled my intelligence 4 times on the last mission." His last words hang between them a little as Cadman's hand slows on his neck. John realizes his mistake instantly. Rodney isn't keeping everything in the room. Heat flares in John's stomach, low and angry. It's none of Cadman's business anyway, and John doesn't mind if Rodney sulks a little harder or a little longer than most people. A few extra verbal jabs hit warm and heavy in John's heart, and remind him of the knife-edged satisfaction of Rodney limp against his chest. "Hey," Cadman says, interrupting his thoughts. Her eyes crinkle at him. "Don't look so serious." Her fingertips trace the sleeve of his t-shirt. "I'm going to grab something to drink. I'll get you something too." "Water," he says, because the air in the room is hot and thick, but his words are swallowed by the music as she slips into the crowd, away from him. John closes his eyes and tips his head back against the wall. It's oddly comfortable, and he wonders if it's because it's Atlantis, or his scale of relativity on comfort is skewed. He arches his back, arching into the music, until the kink in his back from the day's mission stretches out. It feels good to get rid of that, and then, with only the slightest change in the air for warning, something heavy slams him back into the wall, knocking the breath from his lungs. His arms are pinned to his chest, and it's the only reason he gets his eyes open before he lashes out. Rodney? John taught him this hold, and John knows the counter move, but he hesitates. He wants to see how this plays out, because Rodney hasn't been in the room in 3 days, and also because Rodney looks very, very pissed off. Long time no see, John says, because the mission that day and dinner the night before and the briefing and the debriefing and the staff meeting all don't count because they weren't in the room. Rodney gives him a look that clearly says, and whose fault is that? And maybe longer for me since I had my eyes closed when we walked out. John wonders just when he learned to interpret Rodney's expressions so eloquently. Rodney pushes, and then drags, and when John's feet catch up with the rest of him, he's in an alcove in the back of the room, shoved up against the wall and blocked from the rest of the room by Rodney's body. He glances up at all the oblivious people behind them and thinks that someone could commit a murder here and there wouldn't be a single witness. I really need to reevaluate security here, he mutters, only barely aware it's out loud. Shut up, Rodney says, and then shoves his hand down the front of John's pants. John shuts up, swallowing hard as Rodney gets his hand around John's dick. He's hard, has been since Rodney manhandled him into the alcove, and a few short strokes get him really ready to go. He reaches down because Rodney hasn't even unbuttoned his pants and he needs more room. Rodney grabs John's wrist and pins it over his head. John chuffs out what air is in his lungs and pleads, Rodney, at least undo. Rodney twists his wrist. Sensation rockets through John's body, cutting off his words. He would drop to his knees if Rodney wasn't pinning him to the wall with one hand and both legs. Rodney's face is close and he's frowning, tight and intense, and John has to look away. He looks over Rodney's shoulder, sucking his lower lip into his mouth to hide the fact that Rodney's jerking him off against the wall. But no one notices. Everyone's going about their own distractions, leaving John and Rodney completely unobserved. It's the alcove, John realizes, as Rodney's palm skates hard over him, dragging upward. It's situated to disguise them, and wow, those ancients had a kinky side after all, didn't they? Rodney picks up the pace, and John braces himself against the wall. Rodney's hand is quick and confident in his pants, and the odd callus rubs at him when he least expects it. He wants to crawl out of his skin and right inside Rodney, but he can't get out of the corner. He's trapped and thrusting, and over Rodney's shoulder, he sees Cadman looking around for him, a drink in each hand. He thinks about calling out to her, but Rodney's squeezing, and he's having a hard time finding his breath. Maybe she feels his eyes on him, or maybe she hears him gasp, but she turns slowly in a circle and spots him. Her eyes widen and her head tilts, and he finds himself thrusting a little harder against Rodney. She smiles at him and winks slowly, then slides out of view, leaving him alone. Alone with Rodney. This Rodney he doesn't quite know. Say something, he tells Rodney, rough and deep in his throat. Talk, Rodney, talk to me. He's never known Rodney not to have something to say, something to talk about. And he can't help but remember when the roles were reversed, when it was his hand slick around Rodney's cock, and Rodney's pleas spilled from his lips in a constant stream. Rodney stays silent and Cadman is gone, and John feels strangely abandoned, jammed up against the wall, his orgasm building inexorably in his thighs, his ass, the small of his back. Tiny, involuntary tremors tell him that he doesn't have much left in the way of time or control, and he has to make Rodney talk before he comes. "Rodney," he groans. "Rodney, talk, please, talk to me. I... He tries to lean forward, reaching to kiss Rodney's face, but his position is rotten and he can't get traction anywhere. His hands skitter over Rodney's shirt, glancing off skin before he has to balance himself with the walls again. Rodney pushes his palm silently over the head of John's cock, and John gasps for air. "Rodney, just fucking say something, please!" He begs in Rodney's ear and comes all over Rodney's hand. His body snaps forward, shoving into Rodney's hand, into his stomach, into his unsteady arms. "Rodney," he whispers, collapsing against the wall, feeling drained of everything holding him together. "I'm sorry," Rodney says dumbly, mouth slack. He reaches towards John's face, but stops when he realizes his hand's messy. "I'm sorry, I shouldn't have." He brings his hand to his mouth and sucks off the worst of it, his eyes still pleading with John. A hard, dry shudder racks John's body, and he shuts his eyes against the sensory overload. "Rodney," he gasps as a warm, soft hand cups his face. "John?" He opens his eyes and looks right into Cadman's worried face. Of course it's her. The hand on his face is much too small to be Rodney's. He looks over her shoulder and even summons the effort to turn his head. "He's gone," she says. "He's giving you a taste of your own medicine." John wonders how someone can sound rueful and reproving all at once, and straightens his knees, dragging himself away from the wall. His thighs are cramped and his knees throb. The muscles in his arms have forgotten how to relax, and his lower back feels compacted. Worst of all, he realizes as he rolls his shoulders, is that he's wet and half-hard and shudderingly sensitive inside his pants. The walk upstairs, the walk anywhere, is going to be uncomfortable. He's bone-weary and sick, so sick of being John Shepherd. "I don't get it, Laura. He's never called her that before. In his head, she's always been Cadman, even when Rodney calls her Laura. What does he want?" "He wants you, John," she says, as if it's something everyone's known but him. "He just wants to be with you." Rodney lifts his head to see John over Laura's shoulder, coming to join them. His palms go immediately clammy, and Laura notices. "John," she mouths to him, and he had time to nod once before the man in question sets one hand on her hip and pulls her back against him. His eyes fix on Rodney, though, and Rodney meets them bravely, pretending his heart isn't trying to pound its way out of his chest. John's gaze doesn't waver as the music dies and the next song starts, thick and sweet, lying over the room like honey. He reaches out, his bicep brushing Cadman's cheek, and lays one hand on Rodney's shoulder, palm burning through the thin t-shirt. His hand curves down under the ridge of Rodney's collarbone, and for a moment, Rodney forgets Laura's even there. She turns her head, opening her mouth against the inside of John's arm, and rolls her head back for him to kiss. John lets her pull him down, but keeps his gaze on Rodney as she sweeps her tongue through his mouth and then releases him, her hand trailing down his throat in an affectionate farewell. She leans forward, obstructs his view of John for a bare second, then Rodney feels her lips hot and dry on the corner of his mouth. "You're on your own," he hears her say, and he doesn't mind, because the look in John's eyes tell him that it's time, and three's a crowd. She twists away from him, kisses John's mouth the same way, and murmurs something in his ear. Then she slips away, leaving a 2-foot gap as the only divisor between Rodney and John. John's eyes are dark and shadowed in his face, and Rodney's mind runs a million miles a minute with possibilities and guesses and damage control. They're not alone, they're nowhere near alone, and Cadman, their buffer zone, has run off. John doesn't believe in the safety of the room, and Rodney is waiting for him to let go. Instead, John drags his fingers down Rodney's neck, hooking in the collar of his shirt and tugging. For probably the first time ever, Rodney's body responds before his brain does, moving closer with the motion. He steps forward on watery knees into John's palm. John's teeth press into his lower lip, and Rodney thinks his eyes must have held the same terrified resolution when he flew poor, faded puddle jumper number 3 toward the Wraith hive ships. It's the look of a man leaving behind everything he's held to be true. John takes the last step, closes the last foot between them, and then they're fitted together, everything aligned perfectly, hips, thighs, dicks dressed to nestle right alongside each other. And Rodney's stomach is a little convex, just where John's is concave. Rodney marvels at what a remarkable example of human engineering they are in tandem. John lifts one hand to Rodney's neck, blinking when he makes contact with Rodney's skin. It can't be the first time John has laid a roughed, calloused hand on Rodney, flesh to flesh, but maybe it is, because Rodney can't remember losing his breath so quickly and completely like this before. John presses a thumb into the dip at the base of Rodney's throat. Rodney draws a deep breath, the movement pressing his collarbone against John's thumb as he inhales. John waits until Rodney exhales, warm air across his mouth, and then pushes his thumb up. A slow press over skin, skimming deftly over Rodney's Adam's apple, and up against the soft flesh under his chin. He pushes, and Rodney goes with it, letting John tilt his head away to the side. Soft hair brushes his forehead, then his cheeks as John lowers his head. John's mouth presses into the junction of Rodney's neck and shoulder, his stubble a faint, unsatisfying scratch on hypersensitive skin. Rodney's cock surges and he gasps, untethered, into the dark, vibrating air. He feels like maybe he swallowed a few musical notes and depends on that image to keep himself under control. John's mouth presses again, higher, closer this time. Rodney lays fluttering fingers on the back of John's neck and feels the shudder of breath against his cartoid. John's other hand settles tentatively on Rodney's side. Not to steady Rodney, Rodney realizes with a dual rush of power and tenderness, but to steady himself. Rodney turns his head back, looking for more skin, finding it as the side of his face presses against John's. The friction of John's 5 o'clock shadow, although it's now more of a 2 in the morning shadow, and it takes Rodney the better part of a week to develop this much beard, rakes hard into Rodney's skin and finally starts to alleviate the itch that crawled in there 2 weeks ago. He opens his mouth in relief, gasping a little against John's face, and feels the kisses at his neck go open-mouthed and wet. Rodney's breath comes faster than his words for once, air puffing out as he murmurs John's name and other things lost in the music. John's mouth is on the curve of his jaw, and his words come faster than his breath for once, but they're the wrong words. They're all wait and hold on and shit and can't believe this and sorry. What? No, Rodney says, as John draws his mouth away and presses his hand against Rodney's damp skin. What are you doing? Are you freaking out? Because honestly, at this point, you need to just shut up and deal with it. But John is holding his radio, and who the hell brings their radio to the room? He holds it to his ear, and his voice in the microphone is too low a growl. The Lieutenant Colonel voice in the room, for Rodney to understand. But he understands the jerk of Shepard's head, the resigned quirk of his eyebrows, and the quiet longing in his eyes. They're needed, outside the room.
My heart's in overdrive and you're behind the steering wheel. Touching you, touching me, touching you, God, you touch your mood. I believe in a big cold low, just in the rhythm of my heart. There's a chance we can make it now. We'll be rocking to the song you stole.
Not in the gate room, not in the labs or Elizabeth's office or the jumper bay. Not in his quarters and not in John's, although that might have been too much to hope for. He's knocked on Cadman's door and got no answer. John stands in the entrance to the room and scans the few people remaining. Rodney's near the back wall, all arms and barrel chest, leaning back against Cadman. She's sitting on a table, her legs hooked loosely around his waist and her hands squeezing his shoulders. His eyes are closed and his mouth is always, always moving. John strides across the room determinedly, oblivious to whatever music is piping softly, softly for the room, through the sound system. Cadman sees him coming and smiles, unhooking her legs and pushing Rodney upright. Rodney opens his eyes and stares dumbly at John. "With me, McKay," John says. Then reaches out and wraps his fingers around Rodney's bare wrist. The skin feels feverishly warm and dry, so good under his fingers, and there's no resistance when John walks out of the room. The lighted hallway is cool, quiet, and bright in John's eyes. He takes one deep breath and turns on Rodney, dropping the captured wrist. He doesn't waste time, doesn't give fate a chance to spin them away. He takes Rodney's face in his hands and pulls that gaping mouth against his own. It takes a minute to penetrate, for the thought to fully realize. He's kissing Rodney, and it's so shatteringly good his knees buckle and nearly fail. Oh God, Rodney pants as he grabs John and hauls him upright. You idiot! We had every opportunity. You could have done this weeks ago. I am not, John growls between kisses, going to hide in a room to pretend that what we do doesn't matter. Rodney moans and whimpers into his mouth, noises that sound like agreement. John drags himself away from Rodney's mouth and stares at him. Wide, pleading eyes, red face, wet, slack mouth. And John thinks he's never been so hot for someone. Now are you ready to go upstairs? He asks, the words surprisingly easy. Oh my God, what a stupid question, Rodney replies, frantically tripping over his words. Of course we're going upstairs. With that, Rodney latches onto John's wrist and drags him into the transporter and out into the living quarters. John just laughs, lets Rodney drag him. And even though there's no one to see, he wouldn't care anyway. Because Rodney McKay dragging Colonel Shepherd through the halls by the wrist isn't even anything to speak of anymore. John stops at his own quarters and curls his arm in, making Rodney stumble against him. He grins and drags Rodney into his room and presses him right up against the cool metal alloy of the door. He slides up against Rodney, close, as close as they were in the room hours ago. John, Rodney says quietly, for Rodney, and wraps his arms around John's back, taking his weight. John exhales against Rodney's neck, which is warm and smells like Rodney. He cups his hands around Rodney's hips and presses a gentle kiss to the notch of Rodney's collarbone. "I'm going to suck you off," he says against Rodney's skin, because God knows Rodney deserves it after all this shit John's put him through the last couple of months. "I can do it here or I can do it on the bed." He slides his fingers under Rodney's shirt, feeling warm skin. "For God's sake, do it on the bed," Rodney gasps. "Your knees are going to go soon enough as it is with all the crazy running you do." Then he tangles his fingers in John's hair and pulls his head up to kiss. John pushes Rodney's shirt up under his arms because he's tired of so many barriers between them, but can't bring himself to break the kiss. Rodney does it for him when air becomes a consideration and drags his shirt the rest of the way over his head. "We have to get there first," John manages, before Rodney grabs his face and kisses him again. He curls his hand around Rodney's biceps, feeling the muscle twitch and roll under his palms. He pulls awkwardly, trying to steer Rodney toward the bed. Rodney is scrabbling at his shirt, trying to press skin to skin, and John would like nothing better. His shirt, washed soft, feels scratchy and irritating nonetheless. Rodney's hands against his back are heaven, and if it feels that good to him, it should feel that good to Rodney. He palms Rodney's pectorals, feeling the nipples hard against his calloused fingers. He sweeps his thumbs down Rodney's sternum, slowly spanning fingers over ribs. Rodney wrestles his mouth just far enough away to ask, "Why can't I turn down the lights?" And John replies, "Because I want to see you." They both know who wins that battle of wills. Rodney shudders against him and drags them both back, fists wrapped in John's shirt. He pulls back abruptly and yanks, and John is lost in the dark tent of t-shirt tangled over his head. He pushes Rodney blindly down to the bed and hauls the shirt the rest of the way off, casting it aside. John kneels between Rodney's legs, nudging them wider with his knees. Button goes easily, but he has to be more careful with the zipper. And then he can peel Rodney's pants back, open them to the air, to his mouth. Rodney's still wearing his boxers, but John finds him in the rumpled cotton, drawing his thick red cock out of the placket of his shorts. "John," Rodney whispers. John doesn't look, isn't ready to see Rodney's face. Rodney's face doesn't hide a thing, never has. And John can already feel the desire and wonder and everything else they have humming between them. Seeing it all laid out on Rodney's face would just be too much. Instead, he leans down, slides himself flat, and puts his mouth on the head of Rodney's cock. It's warm, skin soft, salty on his tongue, and then heavy against the roof of his mouth as he slides down the shaft. Rodney makes a sound, and John puts his hand on Rodney's hip to say, yeah, I'm right here with you. He strokes his thumb in the hollow of Rodney's thigh and draws his mouth up to the tip of Rodney's cock and then slides back down again. He lets his tongue trace the underside, teasing under the head and sucking just a little, just enough to make Rodney squirm. The silence echoes in his ears as he works. No music, no voices. No obscuring noises, just the odd quiet of his room and Rodney's rising gasps. Rodney's cock fills John's mouth, his hip fills John's hand, and John finds himself gasping a little as well. There wasn't enough air in the room, and there's too much air in this room. He just can't seem to get it. Later, he thinks, he has other things to worry about now. He rubs against the mattress because he's hard, and that's all he has, and he can worry about that later too. He could touch himself with his free hand, but he's not inclined to split his attention. Rodney's still dressed mostly, which is stupid, and means John didn't plan this well at all. He presses his hand against the inseam of Rodney's pants, which brings him into contact with Rodney's balls through too many layers of clothes. He grunts in frustration and goes to pull off so he can strip Rodney down properly. But Ronnie says, "No, no, John, I'm," and thrusts into his mouth. John slides back down over him, taking Rodney deep in his mouth, and swallows just in time to catch the first taste. Rodney whimpers and pants as he comes, saying John's name over and over. It's all John can hear, far away, as if he's underwater, as he closes his eyes and swallows and strokes and sighs. When Rodney quiets, John pulls off and drags Rodney's pants down his legs. The boxes are more difficult. They're twisted and damp and stuck to Rodney. But John manages them anyway, and soon they're on the floor too. He dares a glance at Rodney's face and finds Rodney beaming at him in undisguised joy and, well, smugness. He's still Rodney, and that might be the biggest revelation of the entire night. "Hey," he whispers, pushing himself upright and crawling over Rodney's leg to sit on the edge of the bed. He's fully hard in his pants, uncomfortably restrained. "You okay?" "I am fantastic," Rodney says, heavy-lidded and cheerful. He reaches over, slides his hand up John's leg and settles around the visible shape of him. "You should be fantastic too," he said, stroking his thumb up the side and making John shiver. "Talk to me. Tell me what you want. We can do anything. Really." "Dear." Johnny draws his hand down Rodney's thigh, watching the hair stand up under his touch, and giving Rodney every option to put tonight on his own terms. "Do you want to turn over?" "No," Rodney says, his voice smug with certainty. "I want you to fuck me face to face." John's breath chokes up in his throat because Jesus. "All right," he hears himself say, because he can't deny Rodney anything. Not when Rodney's cock is soft against his leg, still wet from John's mouth. He hops off the bed, over Rodney's leg, and yanks at the fastenings of his pants. They fall down his legs as soon as he gets them open, and he kicks them aside. Rodney sits up and reaches out and hooks a hand around John's thigh. "It's so hot when you go commando," he says, drawing John over. He lowers his head and John feels lips and tongue on the head of his cock. "Rodney," he whispers, stroking his fingers over Rodney's wispy hair. Rodney pulls off slowly, incrementally, with the light close of his lips. Too light to be a suck, too dirty to be a kiss. John has no words for what's happening between them. "I have," he says, and his voice breaks. He tries again. "I have things." Rodney's hand slides off his leg, and John takes that as permission to open his bedside table and find the tube of gel and a condom packet. "You don't need this, you know," Rodney says, picking up the condom packet. "It's expired anyway." John sits on the bed and kisses Rodney's stomach. He slicks up his fingers as he goes, winding the cap of the tube by touch and smoothing the familiar stuff over his knuckles. He pushes both in at once, stretching Rodney quickly. The little grunt Rodney makes is reassuring, and of course the words pouring from his mouth make up the best barometer of all. "Yes, that's good, fine. Hurry already, do it." John leans up to kiss him, to crush the words between their mouths. His arm isn't quite long enough, so he slips his fingers out and strokes his own cock, a little more lube making it slick enough. Rodney's still holding the condom packet, so John puts his clean hand on Rodney's. Rodney's fist clenches under John's hand and he says, "I want you, you idiot." John nods and sits up, finding a comfortable position on his knees, and then he touches his cock to Rodney's skin, slides down until he knows he's where he wants to be, and pushes forward. John closes his eyes as Rodney's body takes him, tight and hot. The angle's all wrong, and he slips his arms behind Rodney's knees, pulling him up a little more. And Rodney totally cooperates by hooking one leg over John's shoulder, John wouldn't have given him credit for being so flexible. Rodney's mouth is open, but for once no words are coming out. He lifts his hips a little, a non-verbal signal that he's ready for more, that he needs more. He's not hard, but his eyes are bright with arousal, and John's seen that expression too often in past months and done nothing about it. He rocks his hips, a quick pull part way out and a sweet slide back in. Rodney's breath hitches and he tenses around John, and suddenly it hits him. They're really here. They're really doing this. And this is really happening. He moves, finding the rhythm quickly, easily, and settling in, bucking Rodney in quick, even strokes, his gaze fixed on Rodney's face. Rodney moves with him as best he can and runs his hand over John's chest, his shoulders, his biceps, and even, once or twice, through his hair. He doesn't speak, his eyes wide and his mouth trembling, and that tells John everything he needs to know. John's not going to last long, not after everything leading up to this, not after blowing Rodney first, not after this oddly sweet, silent coupling. He loses his rhythm as quickly as he'd gained it, quick and steady, devolving into hard and desperate. Rodney's body clenches around him, even though Rodney's not coming, and that pushes John into a hot, blinding burst of pleasure, all the tension drawing up from the back of his thighs and the base of his spine pushing through him, contracting his muscle, stealing his breath and temporarily blinding him. Rodney's hands are tied on his wrists, keeping him from collapsing. He works his way out slowly, Rodney's leg slipping down his arm, and he rolls to the side, untangling himself reluctantly. "It would have mattered," Rodney whispers, warm breath against his eyelids. John opens his eyes and lifts his hand to trace fingertips along the downward slant of Rodney's mouth. "Always did, McKay. Always did."